Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, off and running on a Tuesday. It is the 7th day of March, 2023. The Buckmaster Show in our 13th year, broadcasting from The Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, our radio station, 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from our friends who do the 24/7 feed at kvoi.com. The Buckmaster Show live line, when we do our telephone interviews, and we'll do a couple of them today, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dennis Hoffman closely studies the regional economy in Arizona. He conducts economic research for most major businesses across the state, several state agencies, and numerous foundations. Dr. Hoffman's the director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business and director of ASU's Office of University Economy. His works include the construction and maintenance of the tax revenue forecasting model used by the state of Arizona's Executive Budget Office. He has been doing that each year since 1982. Dr. Hoffman, Professor Hoffman, happy birthday, first of all. How are you today?
Bill, you're reminding me how old I am. 1982, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, it
How
is.
How are you, Bill? I'm doing fine.
Doing well. I'm glad you're doing well, and hope you'll do something fun later today for your birthday. The headline in our paper a couple of weeks ago, Arizona job market tilts in rarely seen way, that economists are saying the churn of people moving between jobs is driving up wages in Arizona. Is that your take on this?
Yes, there's a tremendous excess demand for workers in the state at this point in the cycle. And that's driven by, and that drives up wages. So you got folks looking around their, over their shoulder, every position, seeing, you know, where can I do a little bit better? And they're eager to move if they can. So why is that happening? It's because we have an unprecedented, decline really in hesitation in labor force participation. We have folks in households deciding that it in this particular time frame, it makes more sense for one of the people in the household to take care of kids, child care, worry about child care, managing the household, budgeting, shopping, elder care, all of that. And I think that's an artifact of the pandemic. And guess what, Bill? This is probably one of the most sluggish periods in recent history over the last 6 years for the pace of legal immigration migrating into the country. And all of that is a recipe for a lack of workers. And that's why employers are scrambling.
Look at these average wages now in Arizona, approximately $31 per hour in the private sector. Can we compare that to other states? I mean, it seems like that's pretty high.
It's up everywhere.
It is up everywhere.
It does depend upon the job mix. Arizona has attracted we're near the nation's leader in the last year in the creation of manufacturing jobs, which have historically paid higher. The worker is finally in a great bargaining position. And for decades, it seemed the opposite, that the employer had all of the leverage. Right now, it's the employee, and the result of that is higher wages. So, you're making me think that I need to be knocking on the dean's door and asking for a raise, Bill. I don't know about you, but it's time.
So let's move to the effect of all of this on inflation. The Fed keeps raising rates. However, it really, other than a couple of very well-known job layoff centers like Amazon and a few others, you really don't see this inflation putting a dent in the job market. What's your take on this, Dennis Hoffman?
Well, the Fed has one tool, and it's higher interest rates, it's demand destruction, and that typically hits interest rate sensitive sectors like automobiles and housing. And it certainly has hit housing. You see housing really slowed. It started to come back a little bit in January and February when mortgage rates moderated a little. But now with mortgage rates, you know, spiking back up, I think that's going to we're going to find that any kind of housing recovery is short-lived. And so their hope at the Federal Reserve is that if you slow down a couple of these significant sectors, ultimately, the pace of hiring slows down. People get a little bit more nervous about their jobs, and they don't spend as much. But seemingly, we've got a long way to go before we find anything binding there. And what that may mean, and that's why you're seeing the panic, not panic, but concern on Wall Street. What that may mean is we have to suffer even higher interest rates before we're done with this cycle. There's, you know, some economists hope that we can just kind of manage through, but the folks on the Federal Reserve Board seem, you know, pretty stern in their resolve to stamp inflation out of this economy. And you know, one solution would we produce more goods, but you know, we'd have to liberalize reduce tariffs, we'd have to liberalize trade laws, we'd have to open up pathways for legal immigration to try to increase the supply of workers. There's ways of doing that, but they're not particularly politically popular right now, and they're a bit longer term. So, you know, inflation's about supply and demand. If we can't increase supply, we've got to reduce demand or put up with it.
You know, this is a little bit off the point. The Super Bowl, of course, was held up in your neck of the woods, up in Phoenix, last month. I just saw a number that the Super Bowl generated $600 million in economic impact for Phoenix and Arizona economies. Do you believe those numbers?
I don't know what your particular source is right now. I don't know how much data has been released on that.
According to an economic impact report delivered by the Rounds Consulting Group, and this came out. It was a news release issued through the University of Arizona saying that the economic impact of the University of Arizona Space Science Program rivals that of the Super Bowl.
Got it. Jim does good work. And so you can trust those basic estimates. We're trying to refine that number, actually, at W.P. Carey, Bill. We had a core of undergraduate students effectively chasing attendees, Super Bowl attendees, and trying to get them to fill out surveys so that we can identify their actual spend. I'm not directly affiliated with the research team, so I don't know what their timeline is. But 600 or more would not surprise me at all with respect to economic impact of Super Bowl. And if people are puzzled by that, it's, you know, folks that attend Super Bowls, I don't know how many you've been to, Bill, but I have not been to one. And part of that reason is I don't have the incomes, an income that would afford me the opportunity to attend the Super Bowl. People that attend Super Bowls are very well off. They come in and they spend huge amounts of money on hotel and restaurant and ancillary purchases that they make here. And the Commerce Authority, by the way, is spending a fair amount of time with CEOs that came in to try to convince them to you know, expand businesses in Arizona. So that 600 or 700 or 800 million that you see reported next to a Super Bowl may be kind of, you know, one aspect of of how important it is.
All right.
But let's not forget Jim's point and the U of A's point, and ASU tries to make a very similar point. The things we do in higher education, Bill, matter far more than events that are here today, gone tomorrow. We leave lasting imprints on this state every year. Do you know Sun Devil grads earn about $20 billion annually in this state? And so if we could add U of A and NAU to that, where are we? You know, 25, 30, 30 plus billion dollars earned annually by the graduates of the three in-state universities.
Yep.
It's a fantastic story, and we got to tell it better.
All right. Professor Hoffman, always a pleasure. I hope you have a great birthday. We're trying to check in with you at least every other month. Real quickly, and we are out of time, the state legislature, how's the budget forecasting going real quickly?
Well, there's less interest in the budget forecasting right now, and the reason for that is there's so much money that's still sloshing around from the pandemic. And so we've got to get a transition in place from spending existing money that, you know, found its way into this state to providing for the ability to pay our bills 2, 3, 4, and 5 years down the road. I think that's where the concerns are going to be. And I'm continually worried about it. You know, we cut taxes today and then we worry about, we have problems tomorrow. That's typically the nature of our state.
All right, Dennis Hoffman up at ASU. Thank you, Dennis. Have a great birthday.
All right, thanks, Bill. Be well.
All right. This portion of our program presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's open Tuesday through Saturday. They open the doors at 6:30 in the morning, Sunday 7 o'clock. Get there early for the best selection, especially on the weekend. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Open right now for lunch. They are located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Up next, Shelley Fishman with me with a very enthusiastic thumbs down. What else is new? Tuesday afternoon on Buckmaster. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Buckmaster show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And what say we check in with our friend Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how's your week going so far?
Well, it was fine yesterday. It was great last week, and then there's Tuesday.
Yeah, and when I heard this morning that Chairman Powell would be testifying today in Congress, I was going, oh boy, here we go.
Well, you know, the Fed chairman, as Dr. Hoffman just told us, has a very blunt tool to use to try to control inflation. And one of his two jobs is to control inflation. The other is to try to promote full employment. Well, we've got the full employment, so he's only got one job left, and that's to control inflation. And, you know, he doesn't want to look unemployed. So what he has to do is control inflation. And he's saying things when he testifies in Congress, as he did today and will again tomorrow, which indicates that he is going to do what he needs to do to control inflation. And so the market hears that, and they instantly go to higher interest rates. And that is something that investors think is bad for business, because it is bad for business. And so you get a day like today and probably tomorrow. By the end of the week, who knows? I mean, the general economic overview is fairly positive. And so it's this very weird kind of bifurcated economy. And Dr. Hoffman was absolutely right. The way to fix this problem is on the supply side, not on the demand side. We're not only on the demand side. And the way to do this is to manufacture more. To do that, you've got to reduce tariffs. You've got to bring in people who can, in fact, work in the factories. You've got to do training. There's so much that we can do, both in the medium term and the long term, to control inflation by affecting supply. But instead, you know, that's just politically very, very difficult to get through Congress. And so what we have to suffer through is, you know, Jay Powell's, well, you know, if the data says we're going to have to do it, we'll do it. And the data says, you know, that in inflation is still not under control. Now, in all fairness, we should get another inflation number the end of this week. And next week, the Fed Open Market Committee meets. And so they'll see. But all the bets are for another 0.25%.
And it's not just higher rates. It's higher rates over a longer period. I think that was part
That's exactly
of the message
right.
today as well. Yeah. We're not hearing much about the debt default.
Oh,
it's coming up. I mean, the clock is running on this thing.
So because I try to stay away from politically hot topics, I haven't been successful lately, but this is now the single biggest threat to the U.S. economy and maybe even the worldwide economy is the idea that the United States could default on its debt. The second biggest threat to the world economy and the U.S. economy is that in exchange for not defaulting on its debt, we'll do things to kill the economy, like cutting spending. The whole idea that we are looking at this economy as if we could squeeze it on all ends and eventually it won't break just drives me nuts. If we were to send messages that between now and August, we are not going to be able to fix this political problem, we could almost instantly have a million people unemployed, an additional million people unemployed. If we then don't fix the problem almost instantly after that, this could actually bring us 6 to 10 million people unemployed as the economy just shrinks into a no-growth mode. There's a great article in today's New York Times by Jim Tankersley in which he's quoting the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, Mark Zandi. And Mark Zandi is a name that most economists rely on as being kind of a sober thinker not anybody who flies off the handle. But he's saying, listen, we got to fix this problem. We got to fix it by allowing the government to increase the debt it has. Yeah, we're what, at $31 trillion in debt? So what? We can fix that problem in the long term, but for now, we cannot be spooking markets that are already spooked by higher inflation across the world and a war.
Why in the world would this country shoot itself in the foot over something like this?
Why not? It's fun. You know, you shoot yourself in the foot. It's politics, right?
Oh,
you try to extract.
It just drives me nuts.
You know, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't do it without cursing.
This is
something where the Republicans in charge of the House right now are saying that we can force the president to make spending cuts in programs that they have wanted to cut spending on for decades. And they're using this as leverage. And, you know, I hope Biden stands up to them and simply says, no, you want to destroy the economy? It's on you. You've lost the last three elections. Let's see how many more you can lose.
And this debt ceiling, is there a firm, there's no like firm date where
yes,
this is
passed.
Oh, it's
we're
passed.
Already,
oh.
We're all, yes, we passed that. The problem is, or not the problem, but the salvation is that we can use accounting tricks to postpone the negative effects until about mid-August is what most economists are saying is when you run out of accounting tricks. And at that point, you start not paying off bonds. You start not paying your Social Security obligations. You start not paying other things. And, you know, countries like China start saying, wait a second, you're defaulting on stuff that you owe us? How does that work? And then they take retribution. And they start doing things to shake up the world economy to protect the trillions of dollars in U.S. debt that they own. This is nonsense, and we've done it once before. We did it once before when we during the 2008 crisis when we refused at first to fix the problem, and as the economy started to in fact scare the world to death, the then new president Obama was able to get the $700 or $800 billion he needed. But right now, Bill, I mean, lots of things scare me about this economy. Lots of things make me feel good about the economy. But the thing right now that I look at, and to think that we have people who are supposed to be leaders in our political future threatening to hold the economy of the world ransom for some really meaningless cuts. You can hear the anger in my voice. It makes no sense.
You know, kind of getting back to our lead topic about the wages going up, and we heard Professor Hoffman talking about, I think it was like $30 an hour in the private industry. In its very nature, with the shortage of labor and the wages going up, that's inflationary in itself.
Clearly,
is it not?
Clearly, with wages at $30 an hour on average.
Yeah.
Then and if there are jobs like that, why would I be a waiter?
Yeah.
You know, why would I work in hospitality industry?
It has shaken. It's like an earthquake that has hit this hiring economy.
If one person in a married couple with kids can double his or her salary, then the other one doesn't have to work.
Yeah.
And we've seen that as fewer and fewer people are actually actively in the labor force. So you know, Dr. Hoffman really put it brilliantly. And the idea that this is where we are in Arizona today, Arizona is not the highest paid state.
No.
Take a look at where California, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, where these states are. It's a real problem, and it's causing, you know, migrations of companies and to look for ways that they can save money. We have to solve this problem. First thing we have to do is raise the debt limit. Then we have to fix the inflation problem on the supply side.
All righty. Shelley Fishman, have a great rest of the week, Shell.
You too, Bill.
All right. Thank you.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
And welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat, talking about, well, green things and Zocalo Village. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios. Now that little bit of cool weather, what do we have, snow a week ago? It's in the rearview mirror, I hope. Now is a good time to start thinking about and doing spring planting. I know we've been doing some over at the Buckmaster household. 3384 East River Road is where Green Things is located. Their 13-acre site has pretty much everything you could imagine when it comes to gardening and plants. And, of course, they have Zocalo Village, great merchandise from Mexico and Europe. GreenThingsAZ.com, ZocaloVillage.com, the two websites. Green Things open daily in their 53rd year of business. Let's welcome now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, our friend Mitch Tobin, who is our contributor on the environment on the Buckmaster Show. Mitch is director of the Water Desk, a journalism initiative at the University of Colorado Boulder, focusing on Western water issues in the Colorado River Basin. Mitch is an award-winning journalist, former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register, the Tucson Citizen, and Arizona Daily Star. He's the author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. That book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publishers Award. Mitch joins us on the live line from his home base in southern Colorado. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
The Colorado River, Mitch, as you know, is monitored from 36 different stream gauging stations, and the latest report shows that the river is 64% of normal stream flow. Could you translate that for our listeners? What does that basically mean?
Well, the important thing to know about the Colorado River, most of the rivers in the West, especially the Southwest, is that a snowmelt plays a key role. And so for the Colorado River, most of the water in that river derives from places like Colorado and Wyoming and the Upper Basin, melting spring and running down into streams and rivers and a series of reservoirs. And so, really the key thing to look at is the health of the snowpack over the winter, because that will dictate what the spring flows will be like. And so, thankfully, we've had a really great year in many parts of the West with the snowpack, actually too much snow in some cases in places like California, where people have been trapped, and it's really been a disaster for some communities. But generally speaking, it's been a very, very healthy snowpack here in southern Colorado, certainly in California and Utah. And so that means, more water will be flowing to the Colorado River through its tributaries. But another key thing to know is that we have had average years as far as snowpack recently, and that has translated into below average flows in the river. And that's because of the way our climate is changing with rising temperatures, increasing evaporation, the soil is thirstier, the atmosphere is thirstier, and so not as much water is making it to the streams and rivers and reservoirs, and so that's been of great concern.
So this is 66% approximately of normal, which is considered low, isn't it, Mitch?
Yeah, that's certainly below average. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the level are in a month or two. I mean, we're still actually building the snowpack in places like Colorado. And so the snowpack, will be peaking probably in the next few weeks. And we'll start melting. And, that will be really the key in terms of how big the snowpack gets and how long it lasts. And so we've had a number of seasons in recent years where the snowpack was looking pretty good at this time of the year, but then we went into a very high period, and that snow just disappeared really quickly. And a lot of it, you know, just evaporates into the air, and so does not go downstream to the many users that depend on it.
Could you give us an overview of where you are in Colorado? What are you hearing as far as the snowpack?
Well, in many parts of Colorado, the snowpack is well above average. So on the western slope, basically west of the Continental Divide, you know, you're looking at places that are 20 to 40% above average. Hasn't been as great of a snow year closer to the Front Range, the Denver, Boulder, Fort Collins area. But at least on this side of the Continental Divide, it's been well above average. And we're expecting to get some more precipitation and snow in the coming weeks. So that is looking good. Utah has done even better as far as their snowpack. And so, you know, in California, in some places, it's, 200% of average. So, double of what you would expect. So, they have been mired in drought for many years. So in some ways, this is a very good thing for them. But clearly, if it comes all at once, and we're now actually looking this weekend, going into the weekend, potential storm where there's going to be rain falling on top of snow. And those events can really cause a lot of flooding because causes a lot of water to, hit downstream. And so, California's drought condition has improved over this winter because it has been so remarkably wet. But it's, important to note that actually there's still parts of the state and certainly parts of the West that are still in drought because we have been in such a dry period for about 20 or so years. And the whole region has really been aridifying that even a really good year as far as snowpack and rainfall, that is not going to reverse the trend of two decades. You know, we need like four or five more years like this in a row. And, we would then see things like Lake Mead and Lake Powell increase as far as their elevation. So definitely it's good that there has been more snow and precipitation as far as, the region's streams and rivers. Also good as far as wildfires. That season is coming up. But, you have to take a longer view that we've been in a period of really more than 20 years of a mega drought, and just one good year is not going to reverse that.
All right, Mitch, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll check back in with you as we get closer to the end of the snow season. Snow season, by the way, up in California at Lake Tahoe and some places, they're talking about skiing. And I know, Mitch, you're a big skier. They're going to be skiing well into the summer up at Tahoe and some places. So it'll be a while.
It'll be a long season for sure.
Yeah, well, that's good news. Thanks, Mitch. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks. Take care, Bill.
All right. We're going to break right here. Coming up next, Dr. Mark Sykes, the CEO of the Planetary Science Institute, based right here in Tucson. He will be with us right after the break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region.
The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on this Tuesday afternoon. Boy, the weather is starting to look really nice. I think I saw the big 8-0 in our forecast. 80 degrees. That means time to start thinking about a great getaway over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, doing a little hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Things really greening up after a pretty darn productive winter rainy season over there. So check it out. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities and indoor as well. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the website. Start your planning. Things to do, places to stay, great places to dine as well. Let's welcome now Dr. Mark Sykes for his monthly visit to the Buckmaster Show. He is the CEO and director of the now half-century-old Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute. He doesn't look a day over 50. Actually looking great. He's lost some weight. Stop. Eating well, including Mark is of Scottish descent, very proud of the fact. And he has with him today a pretty much very Scottish kind of lunch, isn't it?
Oh, well, it's traditional.
Tell me about it.
It's a little haggis, homemade haggis.
Homemade haggis,
yeah.
Which... the ingredients...
It's a kind of organ meat of lamb, a heart, liver. We can't get lung here. It's illegal to sell it. And you stuff it into... You mix it up with a bunch... You grind it up and you mix it with oats and a bunch of herbs. You stuff it into a beef bung and bake it in the oven sitting in some water. And it's a wonderful thing.
Mm.
If you like turkey dressing with giblets,
uh-huh.
It's the same kind of flavor profile.
Mm.
So it's not that crazy.
Mm. And very much a staple of Scotland.
Well, it's a traditional food over there. I mean, it's like, you know, their blood sausage and stuff like that. It's really food for people that can't afford to waste anything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of wasting, I don't know how what NASA has been up. Well, I know what NASA has been up to. They, some would say, they wasted a ton of money on the Artemis project, right? Cost overruns. What did that project start out to be? That moonshot. What kind of money were they talking about?
Oh, well, back in the 60s, it was like 5% of the annual budget. It was a pretty big ticket item.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that would be after all the inflation over the years, but...
What was the cost overruns with the new program?
Well, the overruns were primarily in the launch vehicle, which got to be extremely expensive, the SSL. And... or SLS, Space Launch Systems. And but there are some things which haven't been built and tested yet, you know, like what we're going to land on the moon with, and this gateway station that they're talking about. So yeah, there's more to come. And but there's also no long term plan. You know, go there, show the flag. You know, there's no commitment to being there beyond one landing, you know, maybe two. And of course, at the price, then it makes it difficult because if you want to go up there and stay there, which has never been in our plan, then you really got to focus on how to reduce costs. You know?
But going and staying there is a plan, I think, right, of China and maybe some others or no?
Not yet.
So nobody's really talking about going there and staying there.
Well, they go there and they give implications and wink, wink, nod, nod. But in terms of actual planning, if you're going to plan to do something like that, then there's activities that would have to be started now, because again, you have to figure out how to, in the long term, reduce your costs of fuel, reusable vehicles, and where are you going to get resources? So.
NASA has already cut, let's see, $25.5 billion from the fiscal year 2023 omnibus spending bill.
That wasn't cut. That was their budget.
Oh, excuse me.
So they got a 5% raise.
Yeah, that wasn't the cut. I read this wrong. NASA got nearly $25.5 billion mm-hmm. for their spending program.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, which was a 5% raise, which was good. And that's being threatened now with all the talk of spending cuts, you know, and these things kind of take on a life of its own. And so that would not be good at a time when they're trying to, you know, do this Artemis program. But also they have they've got other programs like the Mars Sample Return, which has been running over budget. They've embraced the idea of a new class of great observatories in the future. I mean, JWST is a fantastic instrument that started out at $1 billion, ended up being 10. Mm. And now they're talking about a class of observatories at $7 billion a pop.
Mm.
And that would require either a complete reallocation of resources within the NASA budget, or its budget to go up significantly in order to cover the costs of these additional observatories over the next decade or two.
Venus program. There's a Venus program that may be also selected for cutbacks.
Yeah.
Veritas.
What tends to happen is that when there's cost overruns, you know, in programs, and it's usually the big programs that have all the volatility, because the smaller programs like the Discovery missions, the New Frontier missions, they're cost capped. You know, all the research programs, they're cost capped. You can't go back and say, please, sir, can I have some more? But the big programs, they're not so much capped. And they have overruns. And so the first response is to cut all the reduce the funds for the cost cap programs, which are cost effective, and those are more numerous as well. So a couple things that have happened recently was the NEO Surveyor, Near Earth Object Surveyor, which is run out of the University of Arizona. That's been delayed for several years, but it's not clear that, I mean, right now they're shut down.
And, the near-Earth surveyor would be to look for incoming objects.
Right, right. Remember the DART thing that hit the hit the moon of the asteroid?
I would think that would be something that this country would want to invest in.
If we're worried
kind
about
of an
things,
early warning system.
Yeah, if we're worried about hitting things, having a means of dealing with that kind of a situation. It would make sense to put up something to find the objects that we're going to try to deflect or whatever.
Right.
But right now, you know, there's and to do that effectively, we really need to have a satellite-based system, and that's been delayed and delayed and delayed for many years, and now it's delayed for many more, and it's not clear how they plan to ramp that back up because, you know, you lose your team after a few years of no funding, and the Italians, French, and Germans, I think it is, that are making contributions, and are they going to be able to hold their breath for, you know, several years, you know, because they have their own priorities. Then the Veritas mission. Now, it was very exciting, you know, because we haven't been to Venus in over 25 years, okay?
What was the last mission?
The Magellan.
Magellan?
Yeah,
okay.
the radar mapping, and it really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
And Venus just is more and more interesting all the time. You know, the talk that it used to have an ocean, you know, and then it had this, you know, lava covering its surface. Probably all within the last billion years or so, there's talk about whether there's life in the clouds, you know, because of some chemistry that's been detected there.
But Venus at one time was very Earth-like, correct?
That's the hypothesis. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so at the last discovery call. NASA selected two Venus missions, you know, kind of make up for last time, Da Vinci and Veritas.
Mm-hmm.
And so Veritas has just been, again, put off launch for several years, but their budget through 27 is zero. Now, you don't just like magically turn around and build, you know, again, you've got to. Where's the team going to go? How is this going to be put back together again? I think Lockheed's a partner on that. You know, I mean, they're shut down on all that work. There's no credible plan for starting up any of these things again. And also what happens when you do this? You're costing more money.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's
so
it's,
when it does, if it ever does get started up, it's going to cost a lot more.
It's penny wise, pound foolish, and it's a common approach.
White House cybersecurity strategy was unveiled. Russian and Chinese hackers, major threats to U.S. Not only Earth networks, but space networks.
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of our communications through satellites.
Yeah.
And so the Russians were targeting the Starlink system, you know, because it was providing some coverage over Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
They're going over assets that would serve Ukraine, but of course it has other impacts as well. It turns out that our satellite systems are not quite as hardened as you might expect because I think people didn't really think that they're going to go after our satellites, you know, because it so much of them provide kind of worldwide service and such. But no, there's, you know, denial of service attacks. They're even worried now about the components that are integrated when they're constructing satellites because, you know, through the outsourcing stuff, you know, they're getting things, parts from all over the world, including Russia and China.
So they're in on the ground floor when the product is manufactured.
And so you design something that can serve another purpose.
It's easy to hack if you know what's in it. Anyway, Mark Sykes, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit with us next month. For folks that would like more information about the Planetary Science Institute, real easy, the website psi.edu. Thank you, Mark.
Good. Thanks, Phil.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Sykes and John, engineering and producing our program, that will do it for the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with you in about 23 hours. Hope everybody has a great afternoon and evening.